So you weren't on the record for what you said, but I'm on the record.
You're on the record.
I like the fact that that Gary somehow spun our lackadaisical, lazy approach to parenting as a good thing. Either that or it was like an underhanded rebuke, which is even better. Isn't that what Paul, like the Apostle Paul always does? Like he's like, call it the velvet brick. He starts off the epistle like, I thank God every time I think about you, Dan, you know, you're amazing. But then he's like, what the heck's wrong with you? You guys are sinners, you know, get your kids under control. I'm just joking. So, yeah, everyone's laughing except for Gary because jokes are only funny when they're far from the truth, right? So we had the privilege when we were at Mo Ranch to meet Gary and to meet James and to meet a lot of some other people in this room too, and it was a very life changing thing for us, and I was actually commenting. To my spiritual father, and I heard James say that, and I thought, you know, if anybody's not accustomed to this ministry, they probably think it's like a cult. It's a little weird. But I was commenting to a guy that disciples me, and I said, you know, I just spent some time with James and with Gary at this Cat Springs deal, and I said, you know, they're probably two of my favorite people on planet Earth. And I mean that, and I haven't even known them that long. So... both of them. So just talk about Mo Ranch. So it's funny when Gary asked me and Stephanie if we'd be willing to come and share with you guys our experiences, not just at Mo Ranch, but surrounding the Mo Ranch event, if you will. So the backstory and maybe a little bit of the aftermath. I didn't really feel like I had an option. And the reason why I say that isn't just because Gary is intimidating. I mean, he is intimidating. But it's because of the fact that I don't really feel like it's my story to share or not to share. And so I felt like if God wants me to share this story, which it seems like it is if they're asking me to, then I have an obligation to share it because I hope in some way, despite of my inadequacy as a public speaker and my own struggles with anxiety and the fact that even thinking about being in front of people like this is enough to give me a panic attack, I hope that despite all of that, that somehow you take something valuable from what God did in our life through those circumstances. So with that said, a little bit of background of why a guy from San Antonio drove up today to be with a bunch of people from Houston at a camp that's with a bunch of people from Houston. It's kind of a series of events that only God could have orchestrated. But about 3.5 years ago, I got an email out of the blue from a guy, a successful real estate developer in California. Long story short, we'll save that for another day. We ended up in this discipleship relationship, this life-on-life relationship. Some of you guys know, it's Kevin Ring is the gentleman's name. And so the reason why I bring it up isn't just because that's kind of where the Mo Ranch story begins, but because outside of my relationship to follow the Lord, my decision, but it wasn't my decision. So my relationship with the Lord, and outside of my relationship with my wife, my relationship with Kevin in the last 3.5 years has been by far the most transformative experience that's ever happened to me. So I did 4 tours of duty in Iraq, and my mom died when I was 4.5 years old, and both of those things have had an impact on me as a person, but not nearly as much of an impact as having Kevin make a decision to invest deeply in my life. And I say that because if any of you guys aren't involved in a relationship like that with someone where they invest in you one-on-one, then I highly encourage you to follow the Lord's leadership, if maybe that's you being the one to facilitate the relationship as the Paul, or maybe that's you being the one to be humble enough to engage in a relationship like that as the Timothy, because that's kind of underpins the Moe Ranch story, and it's a bunch of families that have come together around relationships, deep relationships, you know. And so, anyhow, I hope that wasn't too far off topic, but Kevin, when we started meeting together 3.5 years ago, started working on me immediately, talking about family camp, is what he calls it. They do their own version of that in Lake Tahoe, you know. So it's really rough up there. So, and so he's saying, "Hey, Dan, you need to just get, you know, Stephanie and take the kids." You know, we had 5 at the time, and of course, the way God always orchestrates this, Kevin also has 5 has kids. They're all grown, of course. And so he said, you need to get to kids and get them on the plane, you know. And it's hard to me, like, you know, I always, like, secretly somebody's got, like, you know, 3 kids or 4 kids or at the time or whatever, you know. When I was actually thought I had any clue what was going on, I'd be like, yeah, easy for you to say, I got 5. And Kevin's like, I do too, you know, get on a plane. You got no excuses, buddy. God knew how to pair that one up, right? And then when I had 6 kids, you know, he's like, hey, don't try to hold that on me. I know it's just one more hot dog and a paper plate. Freaking knock it off. We all know you don't wash dishes. And I'm like, all right. So he said, you know, just, Dan, we'll fund your whole thing for Moe Ranch. You just buy the airfare. And I'm like, this guy's a real estate developer, but clearly he doesn't use a calculator. Because if he did, he'd be able to compute 5 tickets, you know, only a couple lap, you know, to California. I'm like, okay. And so I would talk to Stephanie about it. And her thing was kind of like, Dan, you know, at the time, her thing was kind of like, Dan, I get you for 1 vacation a year, you know what I mean? Vacation a year. And I would say, well, I take off a lot more time than that, but if Stephanie was here, she would insist on saying that it's not a vacation if it involves labor pains. So as a small business owner, I'll take off, you know, to support my wife in her pregnancy and birth and everything, you know. And she's like, that's not vacation, Dan. Like, stop being a tightwad. And so I'm like, well, you know, it was for me, you know. So long story short, she's like, I'm not gonna waste my 1 vacation being around a bunch of people. And you gotta understand, my wife, that puts her in a bad light, but she's an introvert, and she needs time for our family to just be our family, and she likes people, but it does take energy out of her. And so, you know, so it was just an overwhelming thought, and it never came to fruition. And Kevin's always real laid back, and so he's like, Dan, you know, don't push the issue, it's no big deal. And I'm like, okay. And then next year he'd say, hey, you're gonna do it. And then the following year he said, Dan, you know, perhaps I was selfish in trying to coordinate it for you guys to come down to California, because, you know, my spiritual brother, you know, they share the same spiritual father, actually, you know, has a family camp. His name's Dave Rathkamp, and he has a family camp that he does at Moe Ranch, and I've spoke there a couple times, and it doesn't matter where you go, to ours or theirs, it's the same God, the same story, same thing. So that would probably be a lot easier for you guys. So why don't you just talk to Stephanie about that? But it's funny how timing actually matters a lot, because the last 2 years of my life, bar none, have been the most painful, difficult years of my life without any even close seconds, not even remote close seconds. You know, it started, it's kind of hard to even know how it started, because it just started to kind of unravel. But, you know, my wife's parents told us, we went down to visit them for Christmas, and they told us that afterwards that they were getting a divorce. And it's funny, like, you say that, you say it kind of, like, softens the blow, because, you know, the reality is that now they are divorced. And, you know, her dad is with a woman that's 5 years younger than Stephanie, and I think that, and they haven't talked in a year, and all that was starting to happen and happening. But I think the reason why it was so hard was because of the fact that everything that Stephanie knew about God, or at least the foundation for everything that she knew about God, was conveyed to her by her parents, you know. And so almost by proxy, she adopted these principles and philosophies that she built upon herself, you know, but that was the foundation. And then to see the individuals that were responsible for, you know, instilling these virtues just turn their back on God, and then act in a manner that's not just wildly immature, but it was extremely damaging. And to make matters worse, nobody once cared about Stephanie in the whole situation. It was all about them and their decisions, to the point where her mother was telling her, you know, she never even asked her about her own feelings and stuff. She just wanted to talk about herself and their situation. And Stephanie was literally crushed. And it started this erosion of her belief, not in God, but in God's character. And if she was here, and just so you know, we talked, and everything that I'm about to tell you, she blessed off on me sharing. But it started this process where, you know, my wife's a lot of things, but she's not a hypocrite, and she has an inability to say something or espouse something that she doesn't believe to be true, at least about things that matter. So she wasn't willing to. She's observing God, who she believes to be sovereign and in control of all things, allowing not just her parents to get divorced, but simultaneously the property that we lived in and loved for 4.5 years that we felt like God gave us, that's kind of a beautiful retreat for our 7 kids, because we just feel like freaks in the world. I mean, literally every time you go into a restaurant, people say, you know what causes that? And, you know, I mean, like, you know, I can't even get to a freaking table without getting 4 people to say the same one-liner, and they all think they're freaking original, you know? And, like, and after a while, you know, it's not just annoying, it's kind of offensive, because it's like our whole society rejects, you know, children and views them as being a burden. And like, I get it. It's not hard, but like, I don't regret having any one of my kids. And it's so weird, because I feel like at sometimes, checking the time, Gary's like, Dan, you love to run your mouth, so please keep it under 30 minutes. So at times, you know, so she's having these real questions, not just about her faith. And I don't think she ever questioned God's existence. She just questioned the type of God that would allow this to happen. And our neighbors at the same time basically declared war on us, and put our kids in a really hostile environment. And it kind of culminated with us fleeing from our property in about a 1 week period of time to a rental house, you know, in 30 minutes away. And we went from having 8 acres where kids can play and Stephanie felt safe and peaceful, to being in a small house, you know, with their neighbors right next door, and we're constantly worried that, you know, when you have 7 kids, it's like everybody's got CPS on speed dial, you know? Like, they must not be good parents. They must be irresponsible. They must be. And so it just puts this extra level of, like, stress on us, you know? And so we were in this house, and the pain that it brought me to watch Stephanie suffer through all of this, I can't even put it on par with anything. And so, meanwhile, I'm talking to Kevin on the phone, who God had strategically placed in my life, you know, before. And he said, hey, Dan, how about a family camp? You know, are you guys going to family camp this year? You know, Mo Ranch this year? And I'm like, is this guy, like, is he lucid? You know? Like, I work with older people sometimes at work, and I'm thinking maybe, I know he's older, you know, maybe he's got some slipping. And so I'm like, dude, like, you want me to try to get my wife to go to a Christian camp when she literally is telling me? And Stephanie, she wasn't opposed to me saying the actual phrase I'm about to say, but she just hates it when I cuss. And she says, that erodes from your professionalism. I'm like, sometimes that makes a point, though, you know? I mean, Paul cuss, you know? So she reached a point where she said, I said, but baby, don't you believe that you're saved? And she said, or don't you believe in God? And she said, yes, Dan, I believe in God, but I believe that if God does exist, he's a, you know, fill in the blank. And I was like so shocked. And like I always talk to Kevin, and Stephanie knows I do, but because good things have resulted from me talking with Kevin, she tolerates it. And so I talked to Kevin and I said, "You don't understand what she's saying, man. Like she's saying these things to me because she knows the Bible. She's saying, Dan, but what if I'm not elect? I have all this anger and rage and stuff. What if I'm not elect? You know, there's no way, and even if I am elect, like, I don't like this God, like, that's in control of everything, because you always told me that he's in control of everything, but he gets to define what good is. You know, well, if this is his sick version of good, and, like, I tell Kevin this thinking I'm going to shock him, and he's going to be offended, and he just listened patiently, and he says, I think Stephanie's just saying it how it is. And I'm like, yeah, that's the most disturbing part. Like, if that's really how it is, then, like, you know, even, I mean, all these things are disturbing, and he's like, Dan, just tell Stephanie that she shouldn't worry about that. And I'm like, what the frickin' heck? And I'm used to coming back from, and I'm used to dealing with these like really heady theological people, and like they never. I went to all of them first, because they're actually close. Kevin's a phone call away on Tuesdays, and they're all telling me like they don't have anything scriptural to say. Like, yeah, maybe she's not elect, you know. And I'm like, well, thank you, that's really helpful, you know. And so I go to Kevin, and he's like, that's not how it works, you know. It's like the simple answer, right? And I'm like, what do you mean? And he says, oh, all those guys, they know a lot about God, but I know God. I know God, and that's not how it works. And I'm like, and it probably comes off as being an arrogant statement, but it's not. Because what he meant was, I'll tell you what he meant, because I said, what do you mean? and he said, everything you've ever told me that Stephanie said has never made me angry, up until what you just told me she said about God, that I didn't say the word. And he said, I felt myself full of anger for the first time towards your wife, because I love your wife. And he said, and then quickly the anger went away because I realized that she doesn't know him. Because if she knew him like I would, she'd never say something like that about him. She knows a lot about him, but the biggest thing that she knows about God is what she's seen manifested through people that say they believe him. All these Christians that say they believe him, but their actions say something totally different. Like our neighbors, who, by the way, are professing Christians. And I took through mediation all the way to the point where I had to flee from my property. And like her parents, who said that they were Christians and stuff. And so the reality is, Dan, the burden's on you, buddy, because it sounds like she's isolated herself to the point that the only Jesus that she's ever going to see is manifested through you. So you better get your flesh under control, because if you don't let Jesus live through you, then she won't even get exposed to Jesus through that, because it doesn't sound like she's reading her Bible. And I was like, thanks a lot, man. And so like every morning I would just pray like, God, please let me be. And God changed me through all that. Okay, Mo Ranch. Okay. So I go to Stephanie and I say, hey, sweetie, do you think that you'd be willing, or what do you think about going to Mo Ranch this year? And she looked at me and she's like, Dan, and she coined the phrase, which we now use. And she said, Dan, I have no interest in going to Jesus camp this year with you. And I was like, it's called family camp. And she's like, yeah, whatever. It's called Jesus camp. You know, and like much to my dismay, you know, like in the evenings just to cope, she would sit outside with a beer and smoke a cigarette and stuff. When I was in Iraq, she did that and she stopped and stuff. And so, you know, she there's a reason why I'm telling you this. And so she's like, I'm not going to be hanging around a bunch of Christians and stuff. I don't even know where I stand with all that. No, she didn't say that. She said, she had died on the vine. So Kevin asked me next week, hey, how'd it go with Steph, the conversation? And I was like, I told her, and he's like, oh, so she didn't say no. And I was like, it was like implicit, man. And he's like, no, she didn't say no. Just bring it up, you know, if the spirit leads, you know, bring it up again later. So finally, I bring it up to her again. I say, hey, what do you think about going to Jesus camp this year? And she says, this like twinkle in her eye, and my wife's like gift is insight. I mean, she knows people, and I think that's why she struggles so much with despair, because what she sees in people a lot of times it isn't the best in them. But she also, like, when she says, I like that person, you know, like, it's a pretty good indicator that person's probably, you know, somebody that maybe, you know, does love her, or is kind. And I hope what I'm saying isn't judgmental, I'm just trying to be honest. And so the reality is that, like, she's a pretty insightful person, and so she knows me. And she knows that I like to make deals, you know. And so she said, Dan, if you think Jesus Camp is so great, it's going to be such a positive thing for our family, then why don't you put your money where your mouth is, and why don't you pay for a real vacation, like to Colorado, and then also pay for a vacation to family or to Jesus camp. And I was like, crap. So then I talked to Kevin, and Kevin's like, yeah, dude, do it. And I was like, no, don't you understand? Like, I don't have cash flows for that, you know? And he's like, I wouldn't let money be an issue. And once again, I'm like, easy for you to say, dude. Like, I live in the real world. And he's like, God's going to provide. And he did another story, you know? So long story short, here we are packing up for family camp. And like, and I said, Steph, I'm so, I almost didn't want to mention it because I keep thinking she's going to crawfish, you know? Stephanie said not to say crawfish because you guys wouldn't know. Like, you seen a crawfish, they go backwards. Yeah, okay, so go backwards on her deal, you know? Okay, so I keep thinking she's going to crawfish. And so I kept repeating to her what Sam told me, which was, he said, Dan, you don't have to go to any of the Jesus stuff. Like, literally just drop your kids off and they'll be loved and cared, and then you and Stephanie can go walk along the river. And I'm like, yeah, you're saying that, but like, you're gonna guilt me or whatever, you know? And he's like, no, nobody's gonna guilt you here. And I'm like, that's not, guilt is not absent in any church I've ever been to. And so he said, you know, it's, you just, I think you have a great time. And so I had this line I kept using to manipulate my wife into going, right, we don't have to go to any events. And she's like, yeah, whatever. So she gets in the car and then she calls me over and she's like, hey, check this out. She opens up her backpack and there's like beer and cigarettes in there. And she winks at me. And I was like, that's great, Steph. Good, you know, good job, you know? She's like, imagine the irony. And once again, I say irony because she's not hypocrisy, because she ain't a hypocrite. She was probably hiding it because she didn't want to offend anybody or ruin their day. But she sat outside, you know, smoked a cigarette, you know, snuck away. So that being said, we get to family camp, and the first day, the first thing I realized was there's these people that are preparing meals for us, and I don't want to think you understand, like, when you have seven kids and seven dirty dishes, just having a meal prepared for you is like such a blessing. And like, not only that, but like, my wife, you know, started out being really guarded, you know, but like, it's weird, like, Mo Ranch is like this bubble where like, I don't have to, like, she's always on guard in public, you know, like, not just because of the way people, you could tell they feel about us or what they think about us, but more because there's actual real threats in the world to like your kids, you know? And so like, but like in Mo Ranch, it's like this kind of like magical place where your cell phones don't work, which is amazing for me. And like, you know, the kids were able to kind of like spread out a little bit and like do things. And we sensed that immediately. And then like, we get to the cafeteria and they're not only loading our plates full of food for us. And you know, I'm a systems guy, you know, that's what he was alluding to. And so like, I got a system pretty quick, you know, like, Mel, fill up these three plates, boom, boom, you know? And like, and so we were like, you know, going through the line and stuff. But then I have people that don't even know me. They're coming up, hey, can I hold your tray for you? Oh, like, your kids are so beautiful, you know? Like, hi, I'm, you know, I'm this guy, you know. I'm Gary. I know your name, Gary. Don't guilt me. And I'm Gary. Can I hold your tray for you? You know. And so I had a guy come over and say, named Landon, come over and say, hey, I just feel like God wants me to help you. Can I cut some food up for your kids here? It looks like you got a lot of plates of food to cut up. And he's just doing it, and then he just stood there. But I didn't feel awkward, which was really weird. Like, normally I'd feel awkward, like, he's hovering, you know, like, what's he gonna do? But like, he was like waiting to see if there was something else that he could do to help. And I'm like, this is really strange, you know what I mean? I mean, I was shocked, and like, Stephanie was like floored, but she processes internally, so it's like all like poker face, you know? And so I have no idea how she's really feeling. So like, I get into my normal disclaimer before the evening session. Hey, you know, we don't have to go to this session, we don't have to do this and stuff. And she said, no, I'll just end up feeling guilty if I don't go, let's go. You know, but I think she was really starting to kind of be like, hey, this is kind of enjoyable, but she wasn't gonna admit it or that early on, you know? And so we go in, and like, there's this guy named Dave Rathkamp sharing his testimony, which is ironic because he's here, but also, and I hope I don't like defame you by laser focusing on one part of your testimony out of context. but he's sharing his testimony, which is neat because she knew that Kevin's spiritual brother, big brother, is Dave. So it kind of put some pieces together. But Steph starts out doodling on some paper, like, you know, and everything, unenthused. And then I'm so engaged by like Dave sharing his testimony that I wasn't paying attention. Normally I'd be pissed off, like, shh, put away the paper, man. Like, just listen so Jesus can do something here, you know? And like, and so I didn't care because I was listening to Dave. It was a pretty cool testimony. And so all I remember is at one point in the testimony, Dave was, get this wrong. He's laying on a bed, stoned, with two speakers next to him playing the Desperado. I mean, that's the freaking crescendo, like there. And like, I was like, what the heck? Like, this is not Jesus. Like, wow. You know, and like, he didn't even get to like the good stuff, you know? And so like, I'm like this. And then all of a sudden I snap out of it and I look over and Stephanie's like, just totally listening. You know, she's like, you know, and smiling. And I was like, that was even weirder, you know? I was like, you know, like she's like, yeah, you know? I'm just joking. That's totally not true. But she was like, I think what she sensed in Dave is like absolute vulnerability, transparency, and real. And Stephanie likes real. You know, she doesn't like false. And so afterwards, we're walking out, and I was thinking, maybe she'll say something like profound or whatever. And then I kind of looked at her, and I actually felt me looking at her, and so she's like, I like him. And I was like, yeah, that's cool, you know, I like him too. And I was like, that's good enough, you know, and because I mean, for Stephanie to say she likes somebody, she's like, I like him. And I like you too, Dave. So the next day we go to this share group thing, and it's, I'm like, hey Steph, you don't have to go, da 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 da. She says, no, we'll go, you know, but don't expect me to say anything. And I was like, I don't. And then we got to listen to you guys talk, which was awesome. And you know, it was so funny because Carrie made Stephanie feel like at ease because she engaged her and she talked to her, but wasn't like judgmental and was empathetic, you know. And like, I immediately like James, because I think like there's probably some similarities in our personality a little bit. But I mean, you're much better at everything than me, but I mean, you're kind of similar a little bit maybe. And so I feel like we're getting along. And the main thing was I didn't feel judged and I didn't feel awkward at all. And so we went through this whole cycle. And then after that, we're going to the evening session. And I said, hey, Steph, listen, because I knew she still wasn't, she's pretty stoic. So I said, hey, we don't have to go to this thing. And she said, knock it off. And I was like, what do you mean knock it off? And she said, Dan, I need to people, knock it off. And like, if you knew my wife, that is the most bizarre statement that an introvert could have been around a bunch of people, i.e. Christian people, for 3 days and have her say, I need to people. Bizarre, like people, be around people, right? And so I said, okay, and that was the end of it. And so we ended up going to all the sessions and all the stuff. And then on the last day of camp, she opened up and just shared her heart and all of her everything. She just dumped out everything to Gary and to Terry and to everybody in the group, you know. So, you know, you guys were all privy to that. You know, all the bodies hit the floor in the group, and to watch my wife be that vulnerable with Christians is just absolutely mind blowing. And it wasn't like it had some like pretty ending, like, you know, like, oh well, this is how you fix it. It was just like, this is how it is, and like there was no judgment, there was just love. And nobody was surprised by anything that she said. It's just something I can't even explain. Meanwhile, every night, our next door neighbors, you know, that were next to us, or the Trouts, you know, they would stay up late at night with us and just talk to us. Not about themselves, but they would talk to us about us. And they'd ask us all these questions about us, and they also have a lot of kids. But they would just draw us out and engage us and just love us. And Stephanie started being vulnerable with them too and talking to them and stuff. And they never had anything judgmental to say. And I remember sometime during the conversation, one time Randy said, yeah, I totally understand. Yeah, I mean, I've been struggling with that too. I kind of got like a bad diagnosis, you know, a few months ago. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that, man. And I think back now on all the shame, because I was so self-absorbed in my own problems that I just figured, you know, maybe I had a gluten allergy or something, you know, I didn't really know what it was. And then I start getting emails finding out that he's in hospice care and that now he's gone to be with the Lord. And that was, the conversations we had with him were less than a year ago. He was terminally ill. And he never once brought it up to us. All he cared about was Stephanie and I. He didn't care about himself. To the point of his own... He must have known that he wasn't going to be on planet Earth very much longer. And when Stephanie found out, it just crushed her that he had gone to be with the Lord. And so I guess the theme that I want to convey to you was that I thought when I met Kevin Ring 3.5 years ago that I hit the jackpot, because I found this unique individual in the world that actually doesn't just know about God, but seems to know God and walk in the Spirit with God. And then I went to family camp and realized that he's not the only one, you know, and there's other people that do that. Kevin came down to visit recently, and he was only at our house for an hour and a half, and he spent an hour and 10 minutes of that time on our trampoline with my kids, my 7 kids. And it's funny, it was really awkward. First he was upstairs and he was like, let's play a game. And I was like, this is really weird. Stephanie doesn't know him that well because, you know, and he's like, Ruthie, stand up, stand at attention. And he's like, she salute. And he's like this, and then he pushes her over on the bed. And then I'm like, this is really awkward. We're in the bedroom and she's loving it though. And I'm like, why does she love this? This is weird. And she's like, ah, he pushes her over and he's like, now Paul, you walk in the room and say, attention. And then she's like, salute. And then all of a sudden it ended up with Kevin on her bed, ripping the covers off, and they're trying to pull him off the bed. And he's a big, tall guy, you know? And I can hear Stephanie downstairs. I'm thinking, if she walks in the room, she's gonna think he's a total creeper, and he totally isn't. And so I was like, Kevin, can we go outside? There's a trampoline out there. And he's like, sure, whatever. So we go outside. And then the guys that he brought down were talking like adults, like we all do, let the children play, they'll come in for tea, you know? And he's more interested in my kids than he is with me. And I can't tell you what that feels like to have someone love your children. I would imagine that Jesus, if he was on the earth, would love my children. And the reason why he does that is because he says, Dan, and can I have 5 more minutes? Okay, you sure? Okay. So he says, Dan, it's changed my life so much to be meeting with Kevin. In the back of my mind, I always thought that because I knew discipleship, you meet with a guy for a year, and then it's over, you know? And then the disciples his teacher as the navigators, and you know, they'll go and do it with other people. And I had this deep anxiety and insecurity that Kevin was gonna leave me. You know, because I'm still, this life is painful. I was just talking to Dave about it. The pain doesn't stop when you become a Christian. I think God, happiness is not what God wants from us. It's holiness. And he's unwilling to let us stop at happiness when he could take us to such a deeper level through pain. And so, the reason why I say all this is because I was scared that Kevin was going to leave me and stop wanting to talk, and I feel like I need so much help still. And then he came down to visit our Bible study. Keith was there, and he said, he was talking about discipleship, and he shared his testimony. And once again, he always talks about me. I hadn't even heard his testimony before, 3 years. And he shares his testimony. He said, when I choose to disciple a man, I might meet with him for a couple months or a year, but when I choose to do that, it's a lifelong decision. And he said, Dan's my son. And he said, his children, they're my grandchildren. And he said, because when I look at Dan, I don't see Dan. I look through Dan to Melody, to Paul, to Ruth, and he knows all my kids' names, to David, to Jonathan, to Edith, to Titus. And I don't just look at them, I look through them to all the people that they're going to impact through their lives, and all of the men that Dan's gonna invest in over his life. I don't think about my life, Dan, until I'm 80. I think about it for 200 years. I try to think in 200 years because that's the way that God thinks. And so when he said it that day, I didn't know that, and I started crying. I was trying not to because it relieved this. He's not going to leave me because I need help still. I'm trying to figure this stuff out. And the reason why that's so important is that Kevin told me that his spiritual father, I believe, told him that he had interviewed his oldest daughter when she was 40-ish and said, what was the single thing in your life that was most instrumental to your walk with the Lord? And she said, you know, this is a guy obviously that did pretty well if he discipled Dave Rathkamp and Kevin Ring. You know, it's my understanding that he invested in 3 men in his life, Kevin and Grass Valley, you know, California, distance. I was always insecure about having a distance relationship with Kev, and Kev's like, don't worry about it, man. Our relationship with God's a distance relationship. And it hasn't ever been a problem. And so, and he invested in these 3 guys, And we're here because of it. We all are here in Houston and stuff. So anyhow, long story short, he said when he interviewed his daughter that she said, "Dad, you taking me to family camp for the 30 years of my life or whatever," because even when it was the single most influential thing in my relationship with God. These people that care for your kids there, they really care for your kids. And like just having a taste of the kingdom of God, as Sam would put it, you know, that kind of rests on family camp because we are the kingdom of God, right? Because Christ's spirit dwells in us. It's a life changer. And so Gary asked me to end by telling you the future for us. Stephanie and I both are on the same page. When we were driving out of family camp, I didn't know how she actually would debrief me on her experience. I suspected that it was positive, but there's been so much negative in her life and everything. I'm used to hearing negative. And so when we were driving out, she was really quiet. And we cross over the highway and we're driving back and the cell phone reception's coming back. And I was just quiet, I didn't want to say anything. I was like nervous, you know? And she said, "Hey Dan, next year," she's gonna make a deal with me. And I'm like, "All right, here comes the deal." And she said, "Next year, do you think it'd be possible that we could still do two vacations? Because I was thinking maybe we could go to family camp and then go to Kevin's Jesus camp too. Just blow off Colorado." And I was like, I didn't even know what to say. And that's why I said, this isn't my story to tell, it's God's story to tell, because it has nothing to do with me. Like, I'm just glad I have my pants on frontwards. The reality is that for some weird reason, God's put men in my life that have invested in me, and to the extent that I allow him, he's been able to facilitate some events around me. And like, I hope that it encourages you, if you're on the fence about, you know, take it, you know, especially if you're a mom and you know, traveling is really hard. We left family camp with more energy than we went into family camp with. We usually need a vacation from our vacations, and family camp was the exact opposite. So I don't know about you guys, but I'm looking forward to instilling in that legacy in my kids, you know? So that's all I have.